Welcome to a My Ag Life in Citrus episode of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Ashton Carr will report on declines in overall production due to smaller orange and grapefruit crops in California, Florida, and Texas, and smaller mandarin crops in California and Florida. And Taylor Charlstrom will be in. He'll have a report on first-of-its-kind avocado pruning trials going on in Southern California. I'll have a look at national agricultural news and a look at regional ag news, and we start with that regional ag news report right after this.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
In regional agricultural news, effects of the drought on the communities dependent on agriculture will be devastating this year. Businesses that support growers will provide fewer services, handle less crops, and employ fewer people as farmers idle their fields. They applaud the inclusion of the California Small Agricultural Business Drought Relief Program in the governor's May budget revise as an important first step in ensuring the resiliency of the food supply and recognizing the value of the habitat provided by farms, according to California Rice Commission President and CEO Tim Johnson. He says while suppliers and support businesses from the mill and drier to agricultural pilots are critical to farms, without them they cannot survive. He says they must do everything possible to make sure that when it rains again and farming returns to normal, the business partners and communities are still there. The drought will affect the entire Central Valley, but will be a especially hard along the Sacramento River due to historically low rainfall in Lake Shasta's watershed. The Northern California Water Association estimates nearly $1 billion in impacts in the Sacramento Valley. For rice, more than $251 million in impacts will be felt by mills, dryers, and service providers to the industry, along with the loss of an estimated 1,500 jobs. In a time where each drop of water could be key to survival, fields are also critical lifelines to nearly 230 wildlife species, providing vital surrogate wetlands as drought conditions shrink the available natural habitat. As global inflation and war in Europe drive up costs across the country, California Governor Gavin Newsom is proposing a $300.7 billion budget to provide relief from rising inflation, ensure public safety, address homelessness, transform public education, and combat climate change. The governor's California blueprint includes an $18.1 billion inflation relief package to get money back into the pockets of Californians and bring down costs for families. Of the money, $47.1 billion would go to climate commitment. That's an increase of $32 billion to tackle pollution, build climate-resilient water supplies, reduce the risk of catastrophic wildfires, ensure grid reliability, and accelerate clean energy solutions and protect communities from extreme heat. This year's North Coast wine grape crop got off to an encouraging start, but unusual weather swings at a critical time in vine development, the prospects of a third year of drought, and lingering uncertainty about wine demand are causes for concern among some market watchers. Some of the warmer areas of the region, namely Sonoma County's Alexander and Dry Creek Valleys, are seeing the beginning of bloom when vines self-pollinate, resulting in grape clusters, according to brokers. The time of the vine self-pollination to form grape clusters has reached less than 10% of the region as of May 10th, according to Christian Clear, who oversees North Coast grape deal-making for Nevada-based Turrentine Brokerage. Vines don't appear near bloom in Napa Valley, and those in Lake and Mendocino counties were behind that. This is a time of the season when growers want Goldilocks weather, not too hot, not too cold, cloudy, or windy. That's because disruptions in a vine's prepping itself for grape cluster formation, a process called set, can result in undeveloped berries and clusters, a feared outcome called shatter. At stake is the $1 billion plus annual crop from the premium grape growing region, which encompasses Napa, Sonoma, Mendocino, Lake, and Western Solano counties. The region's crop size last year of 400,000 tons was down 13% from the five-year average, a drop attributed to drought, but last year's harvest was up from 2020, which came in 29% below average because of wildfires that year. It's shaping up to be a good potential crop minus a hit and miss frost that has been received, according to Clear. After heavy rains at the end of last year, the region experienced weeks of dry, sunny days, and that coaxed vines to push out buds in February, an early awakening from the typical winter nap. But then came bouts with frost in late February, early April, a heavy rainstorm later in the month that was followed by a few days of frost in the first half of this month. Pockets of the North Coast have suffered from frost, according to CLEAR. In Mendocino County, people are having to make some pretty tough choices on saving their water through the growing season or using it to protect the vines right now, according to CLEAR. And from what he can tell, people are using it right now to protect the vines and hoping that the state does not curtail too much of their water resources out of the Russian River and Lake Mendocino. State water regulators are poised to cut earlier this year than last year how much water can be diverted this summer from waterways in the Russian River watershed and Mendocino and Sonoma counties. Despite the spotty frost issues and colder weather overall this spring, which are fingered for delayed vine flowering in the region, the North Coast is in better shape than any other key wine-growing regions in the state that were hard hit by the frost, particularly in the Lodi area, according to officials. Those are also some areas that are facing further cutbacks and water allocations from state systems. Gavino, the company that created the category for reusable and sustainable polymer-based go-anywhere wine glasses in 2008, announces the introduction of its newest product line. It's called Best Gavino Ever. It's targeted to the on-off-premise winery retail and direct-to-consumer markets. Featuring a smooth, polished lip and Gavino's award-winning patented design, Best Gavino Ever delivers as close to a crystal-like experience as possible in settings where glass is not practical. As the next generation of Gavino, the only shatterproof glass is engineered expressly for the sensory enjoyment of wine. Best Gavino Ever is highly durable, dishwasher safe, and made to be used for years to come. The Best Ever Gavino line is made in the USA, as are all Gavino products. Sierra Foothills Conservancy has announced its latest acquisition, the 1,729-acre Wright Ranch Conservation Easement. It's located in western Madera County along the Fresno River. The Wright Ranch's immense conservation values includes working rangeland, annual grassland, oak woodland, mixed conifer forest, cultural and historic resources, wildlife and habitat resources, open space and scenic values, which will now be protected on a perpetual basis. With the addition of this project, SFC's total lands conserved has reached 52,495 acres. SFC purchased the Wright Ranch conservation easement from partnering with landowner Mr. Michael Wright, utilizing competitive grant funding through the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and the California Department of Conservation. The Wright family has owned the 1,729-acre ranch for nearly 100 years, spanning three generations. The property is rich in cultural resources and has a fascinating history in mining and lumber operations. The property encompasses local geographic landmarks such as Potter Ridge, French Gulf, and the western and northwestern edges of Buckeye Mountain, and over 1 mile of the Fresno River.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Unsure of your naval orange worm program? No worries now with Rango, a proven solution to protect your orchard and hull split from naval orange worm. Rango is an OMRI-listed, broad-spectrum biopesticide with no known resistance, making it an excellent rotation and tank mix partner for both conventional and organic growers. Partner with Rango today. Contact your PCA, local dealer, or visit rangonow.com. Rango, no worries now.
Producers are experiencing smaller orange and grapefruit crops in California, Florida, and Texas, and smaller mandarin crops in California and Florida. Ashton Carr has the report.
Recently, there's been reports of record low forecasts for the citrus industry. Skylar Simnett, a research economist with USDA's Economic Research Service, comes on to tell us a little bit more about the report and what this could mean for the citrus industry.
As the outlook economist for for ERS, for citrus, we went ahead and published a newsletter on the 30th of March. And in that newsletter, we did state that it was looking to be record lows for orange production. That was based on the most recent NAST report at the time, which NAST is the National Agricultural Statistics Service. They're a really important agency with the USDA that actually go out and collect all most of the data that we end up using in our newsletter, where we would make statements of the kind. So since then, there's been multiple NAST reports. There was a report that came out in April. So to be able to be strong on the claim that it's going to be record lows, someone would need to look at those most recent forecasts and publish on that.
Now, as Skyler mentioned, these record lows are based on market moves and could go any way. But we dissect the statistics a little bit further so we can have some more insight on the predictions and what's to come.
So as I mentioned, our statistics come from the National Agriculture Statistics Service for the most part. I mean, there's a few other places we go for statistics. But they have field offices where they go out and they interview the packing houses for the different citrus commodities in the main producing states. And they also actually go out in the field and they measure fruit and they look at fruit drop and things like that. And there has been a trend now for the last, for nearly 20 years now, I would say since 2004-05 season, where we have seen this overall kind of decline or reduction in citrus production every year. Some years it's more than others. Some years it might go up just a little bit, but overall the trend has been in decline. And the primary, commodity that appears to be on this trend is oranges, particularly oranges for the processing market, such as Valencia oranges, the vast majority of which are produced in the state of Florida.
Now that we have a little bit more information on this predicted trend, what is really the cause for these movements?
There's a number of factors that have been attributed, that have been blamed for this trend in citrus production, particularly orange production. The primary culprit is Huanglong bean. That's HLB. It's also known as citrus greening disease, and that is a disease for which there's no cure at the time. It attacks the health of the plant, essentially of the citrus trees, and it basically got a foothold in the state of Florida back in around that 2004-2005 season that I mentioned previously. And so it's from that, at that point, we've seen this decline. We know also from the great work of folks over at IFAS, the Institute of Food and Agriculture Sciences in Florida, that the University of Florida, that is, that we, the costs of citrus production have also gone up. And that appears to be, related to this HLB. Also there's other diseases such as citrus canker. I'm not an entomologist or an expert on citrus diseases. That's also been attributed to the decline in citrus. And then, lastly, there's weather, right? And we know that, for example, during Hurricane Irma back in the 2017-18 season, we really saw a decline in production in the state of Florida, particularly with oranges and grapefruit.
As we look out into the future, there are some ramifications that could come from this, but Skyler tells us a little bit more about what he sees long-term for the citrus industry.
As part of one of my jobs here at the USDA ERS is we do, with some colleagues, we released a baseline 10-year projections, but we do foresee citrus production overall going down in the long term. In other words, this trend that we've seen with oranges and with grapefruit, we expect that to continue. We do expect, higher prices. So it doesn't mean there's necessarily going to be as big of a decrease in value. In fact, we have a projected value increase, which is you estimate value based on price times production, right? Actually going up over the next 10 years. But yeah, production, we do expect to be going down. A couple commodities though, it's different for every commodity, right? And I've really mentioned oranges a lot, particularly the processing oranges that are used for the juice market and grapefruit. But we have commodities, for example, the tangerine group, right? And lemons. In both of those cases, production seems to be pretty stable. And if anything, it going up. That's been attributed to different things, but there's greater per capita availability of lemons, for example, than there was, 10 or 20 years ago. So overall, one more thing I would say is that when it comes to that orange juice, we have seen per capita availability, which is sort of what we use at ERS as an estimate for consumption, has decreased for about 4% every year on average over the last 10 years. So that's the one that seems to really be decreasing, orange juice.
As we round out our conversation with Skylar, we talk a little bit further about prices and what they're reflecting based on these trends.
Just basic laws of supply dictate that when you have the supply curve kind of shift inward, right, because there's attrition in the supply, that you're going to, as long as demand is to remain the same, then you're going to have a higher equilibrium price, right? So we are seeing and we do expect to continue to see higher prices for citrus commodities. At the same time, though, you know, we don't operate independently of other nations, and there's plenty of countries that produce more citrus than the United States who we purchase citrus from or we trade with. So because we're part of this larger system, we don't necessarily expect to see the kind of dramatic price jump that you would have if Florida and California and so on were the only producers of citrus for our U.S. consumers. So yeah, higher prices. Higher value is what we've projected in our report overall, meaning higher prices, but not maybe as extreme as you would have, you know, were we isolated.
Unsure of your navel orange worm program? No worries now with Rango, a proven solution to protect your orchard at hull split from navel orange worm. Rango is an OMRI-listed, broad-spectrum biopesticide with no known resistance, making it an excellent rotation and tank mix partner for both conventional and organic growers. Partner with Rango today. Contact your PCA, local dealer, or visit rangonow.com. Rango, no worries now.
Taking a look at national agricultural news now, a nominee has been named to fill USDA's top trade post. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford has the story.
Here's a statistic we've heard before.
For every $1 of ag exports that we send, it stimulates another $1.27 in additional economic activity.
That's from a voice we've also heard before at the Department of Agriculture. It belongs to Alexis Taylor, currently the director of the Oregon Department of Agriculture. However, she's just been named as the nominee to be Undersecretary for Trade at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, essentially heading up the USDA's trade mission area. No stranger to USDA or trade, before she went to the Oregon Ag Department in 2017, she served as USDA's Deputy Undersecretary in the trade arena. She's an Iowa native, grew up on the family farm in that state. The Undersecretary for Trade position at USDA has been vacant since the new administration took office. Next step in filling that position will be for Alexis Taylor to be confirmed by the Senate. No date for that confirmation just yet. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Overall, consumer prices during April were 8.3% higher than last year, and America's families can expect inflation to continue pressuring their wallets for the next few years. That conclusion is from the American Farm Bureau Federation's economists, who analyzed the inflation numbers in their latest market intel report. They expect inflation to stay above 5 or 6% for the foreseeable future. The report says too much money was created by the Federal Reserve Bank, mostly in 2020, and it's inevitably turning into inflation. Thankfully, the Fed has begun steps to address this, but it will likely take a few years to approach their long-term target of 2% per year, according to the report. It also says the Fed injected $6.4 trillion into the economy between March of 2020 and the end of 2021, a 42% increase in a money supply in 22 months, which is too much money to be absorbed by economic growth. U.S. agriculture depends on trade and is always looking to expand opportunities for overseas business. Trade was a big topic during a presentation at a National Association of Farm Broadcasting recent event in Washington, D.C. Greg Dowd is Vice President of Global Situational Awareness and Chief Economist for Aimpoint Research, and he talked about what lies ahead for U.S. ag trade.
That's a great question, and the answer is there's not much that's going to happen without Trade Promotion Authority, and that is expired, and it takes an administration asking Congress to reinstate TPA, and I don't see that happening, at least in the near term. So without that, that's the old fast track authority. So right. Without that, you don't have a chance to negotiate a free trade agreement. I think we really need to get back in that game, in particular with the UK.
He says a trade agreement with Britain would be good for America's overall economy as well as agriculture.
I think that would be an agreement that everyone would agree on is important for us economically in the United States. There's another country that we've talked about, Kenya, and it's on the docket if we get going again. And there are a lot of things that can be done outside of a TPA. But another country that I'd like to mention that those of us internally in the previous administration were very interested in was Ecuador.
Ted McKinney, CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, says trade talk typically quiets when commodity prices are quite strong. However, he says this time, America needs to be out doing business the most.
When prices are as they are now, and they're not bad, it tends to go to a low level of discussion. And yet, I'll tell you that having traveled my 490,000 miles, that it's exactly now that you need to be out there the most. Because when you're not there, things are at play. If we're not there, somebody else is. And then the next administration, no matter what the politics might be, has to go in and do some of that.
Again, Ted McKinney, CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture.
More than 220,000 crop producers hit by natural disasters in 2020 and 2021 will soon start seeing disaster payments to offset yields and value losses, as the USDA has announced $6 billion will be released under the Farm Service Agency's Emergency Relief Program. The funding comes from $10 billion provided by Congress last fall to address production losses from disasters such as droughts, hurricanes, wildfires, winter storms, and other disasters that struck producers in 2020 and 2021. Under the Trump administration, USDA disbursed disaster aid under the Wildfire and Hurricane Indemnity Program Plus, or WIP Plus, but USDA under the Biden administration has renamed it the Emergency Relief Program. While crop and livestock disasters may stack up for 2022 as well, it generally takes an act of Congress to approve another ad hoc disaster program that would address 2022 natural disasters. Farmers of both commodity crops and specialty crops will receive the first tranche of aid payments to determine losses. USDA will use this existing insurance or non-insured crop disaster assistance program data as a basis for calculating initial payments. USDA estimates more than 220,000 producers who receive crop insurance indemnities or NAP payments will receive ER payments. ERP covers losses to crops, trees, bushes, and vines due to a qualifying natural disaster event in calendar years 2020 and 2021. Eligible crops include all crops for which insurance or NAP coverage was available, except for crops intended for grazing. Qualifying natural disaster events include wildfires, hurricanes, floods, derechos, excessive heat, winter storms, freezing, smoke exposure, excessive moisture, qualifying drought, and related conditions. For drought, ERP assistance is available if any area within a county in which a loss occurs was rated by the U.S. Drought Monitor as having a D2 for 8 consecutive weeks or D3 or level higher of drought intensity. Lists of 2020 and 2021 drought counties eligible for ERP are available on the Emergency Relief website.
Experts say farmers should get used to paying $5 or $6 for a gallon of diesel fuel. Prices set new records, and they're unlikely to recede significantly before it's time to fill up again. On May 13th, the national average retail diesel price was $5.56 a gallon, according to AAA. That is $2.42 more expensive than the average price last year. Jason Schwantz, senior vice president of refined fuels at CHS, said Europe's pivot away from Russia fuel amid the war in Ukraine is driving up demand for U.S. exports, compounding shortages that began with increased trucking demand during the pandemic. Nationally, diesel inventory is 20 to 25% below the three-year average. As part of the Biden-Harris administration's coordinated drive to end the infant formula shortage, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is urging states to take advantage of flexibilities that the department is offering in the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for women, infants, and children, commonly known as WIC, to help families get the safe formula they need. They are acutely aware that the ongoing recalls left many parents and caregivers concerned about access to formula and how they will feed their babies, according to Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack. He says their team is committed to the health and safety of all Americans and is calling on states to act immediately to offer maximum flexibility, information, and support to WIC participants. Meanwhile, USA will continue the work they started in February, working not only within their department but across the federal government, suppliers, and partners to end this infant formula crisis as quickly as possible. Since the recall was first announced in February, USA has been working closely with FDA to ensure program participants and stakeholders have the information they need to keep infants safe. USDA's Food and Nutrition Service immediately reached out to states to offer support and within days announced a suite of flexibilities available, such as allowing states to broadly offer alternate sizes, forms, and brands of formula and allowing stores to accept exchanges of formula purchased with WIC benefits. USDA is also in communication with Abbott, the manufacturer at the center of the recall, with Secretary Vilsack calling on the company to redouble their efforts to ensure WIC participants have access to safe, healthy formula, especially those who rely on specialty formulas produced by WIC. WIC supports the purchase of formula for moms and families of young children. Typically, there are rules about what products families can purchase with WIC benefits and what stores can allow. USDA has been working with states to relax those rules to help deal with the impacts of the shortage.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
Taylor Charlstrom is up next with a report about first-of-its-kind avocado pruning trials in Southern California.
Pruning trees used for agricultural purposes can often have benefits to the tree in the form of tuning tree shape or even things like disease management. In avocado, pruning is not as simple a task due to the general shape of the trees and the fact that pruning has historically been done on a case-by-case basis, according to UCCE subtropical horticulture farm advisor Sonia Rios. However, changing needs combined with a lack of avocado pruning research has caused some growers to wonder more about optimal methods for pruning their trees. Rios and other farm advisors responded to the growing requests.
We came up with this project in about less than a week and a half time from when we thought of the idea of trying to do this again. And surprisingly, we were just out in the field last week and you know what, let's go ahead and do this. And so Gary Bender and I were out in the field and we were literally just going off of what we both knew about pruning, mostly Gary, you know, because he's been a farm advisor. He was a farm advisor for over 35 years. So he's seen it all. And I'm really glad that we have his wisdom with us still. we came up with maybe about five different pruning methods that were kind of on the extreme end that were currently randomly being used, but it's not really consistent. Technically, a lot of growers, they try to do gradual pruning methods, which is where they control it slowly as the tree grows. Because technically you're supposed to start pruning when the trees are in the greenhouse. You know, you actually want to get the main branch, you know, accomplished and get that going. But when you get out to the field, it gets a little bit trickier because pretty much the main purpose of doing pruning or canopy management is you want to try to get the most light into the canopy. And as you guys know, the avocado is a very dense tree. It's a rainforest tree. So you're going to have a lot of layers going within the tree and it doesn't get much light into the canopy as where there's flowers all over the tree.
Rios, in collaboration with Gary Bender, Ben Faber, UCANR collaborators, and grower Greg Kamen at Agua Tibia Ranch in Pala, California, are evaluating different
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.